be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
What?
It's an overview.
Hey, listen, if they said you're a fucking shit, I think that's a compliment. If somebody says you're a good bloke, if a bloke says you're a good bloke, and you're all right. Okay, otherwise that's how easy. Fucking shit.
But you're still up.
Why?
Well, that's a sort of...
I wouldn't you over
it
you.
Rolls off the top of the tongue, doesn't it? Oh, he's a good bloke.
What Don, what? We've started.
So what?
Well, I was going to... What we normally do is introduce who we're
sorry.
Speaking to.
We've got to set the scenes.
So if I said to you we were going to speak to a person who's won 3 Brownlow medals and he was a South Melbourne identity, who would you say I was speaking about? You'd probably say Bob Skilton, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be wrong, but you'd be also correct if you said this man here, who I'm about to introduce, who is a Tasmanian by birth. He played 127 games for St Kilda and 78 for Richmond. He coached South Melbourne twice. He coached South Melbourne, and between coaching South Melbourne, he coached Carlton. He's played in 2 premierships, one at St Kilda in the infamous 66 grand final, and one in Richmond for Richmond. He's a legend, not a Hall of Famer. He is a legend of the AFL. You know what that means? You are in the upper echelon of football royalty. He was inducted as a legend in 1996. He's won 3 Brownlow medals, 2 while he was at St Kilda and 1 at Richmond, and one of only 4 people to have ever done that. He is, I've got a feeling, a reluctant hero. He's a modest man, and he is an absolute star, and his name is the great Ian Stewart.
And could I also put in there an enigma?
An enigma, yes, you can put in whatever you like. Ian, thank you very much for coming to do this. I know you don't like people pumping your tires up. I have no idea why you don't, but you are embarrassed if people say you're a star, aren't you?
A little. Thank you. Welcome. Hello, Sam. Don.
How are you?
Fine.
Relaxed in life and
reasonably
circumspect and looking back on a tremendous...
Circumspect.
Yeah. If you don't understand the word or his way, just say I don't understand. He tries to put you down by using big words.
He tries to put you down, Don, please.
I wouldn't believe that.
What do you mean tries to put people down? Well, that I interview, circumspect, as he reflected, you've had a very full and diverse life, mate, in football and away from football. And we would love to speak to you about all those things, but we'd do the football first. And if there's anything you don't want to speak about, just don't speak about it. So you came from Tasmania. What do you... Me, speaking into the microphone. You don't tell me to speak into the microphone. You came from Tasmania and you've had a fantastic input, a fantastic life in football. Do you actually like the football still? Do you still go to it? Because your medal is coming up at the end of the week. And well, what do you think about it all?
It's not my medal.
It is your medal.
Is it really? Yeah, well, I don't think it is. I love football. Do I go? No. But I watch it religiously.
What do you think of it?
I love it. I enjoy it.
That's fantastic, do you? Because a lot of old blokes like us think that it's probably lost what it had when you played and when we played, but we still think if you like it, good on you.
No, I love it. Enjoy it.
What do you like about it?
Well, I admire their skills. They have better skills than we had.
Not better than you. Ian, no one had better skills than you, mate.
Oh, no, lots and lots of players had skill. There were fewer players in our time. I put myself in your times as well?
You were before
You're
us.
Our age?
Only marginally.
Oh, you started in 61?
No, I did not.
What, when? 63?
63. Yeah.
When did you start?
67.
Just before you. Maybe I was younger. What was the question again?
No
skills. They've got more players have better skills.
No, that's true. But no one had more skills than you, Ian, please.
Well,
I played with you and against you.
Tasmanian players have all got skill because they're taught skill and they're better coached as kids, and the weather conditions help that. The slippery ball. Underage football is played in ice on a Saturday morning. It was played Saturday morning in ice. So you learnt to keep your balance and you learnt your skills.
How old were you when you came across?
19.
And were there other clubs interested in you?
One or two, but not many.
So why did St Kilda, why did you go, what, did you have a choice of where you wanted to go?
I did, but I had, and most young Tasmanians, their hero was Darryl Baldock. He was the epitome of champion, idol, and all young Tasmanian sportsmen wanted to be Darryl Baldock or wanted to play in the same team as Darryl, and I was the same.
So that's why you went to St Kilda?
That's why.
You won
not
two.
For money.
You both played as I was only a kid, but you both were very hard to knock off the ball once you put your bodies over the ball. You had exceptional core strength, something that they recognised.
Well, Darryl had tremendous strength in his body, and for some of the reasons I gave before, you know, the conditions. But my balance wasn't as good as his. I'd never seen anybody with better balance than Darryl. He was along the lines of Matthews, say, Jezelenko,
yeah.
Is there recent players with that core strength? Who are some of the recent players with a core strength?
Well, I think Greg Williams may have.
Yes,
you
course.
Know,
yes,
you
yes.
didn't lift weights, but you seem to be stronger in the lower part of your body, didn't you? Gary Ablett Geelong.
Yes, I wasn't in their class.
Bullshit.
No, not with body, not with core strength. No.
Well, you made up for it in real courage. Well, that's a compliment too. I was amazed at your courage, especially when you went to Richmond.
So you won two of your Brownlows.
Hang on, idiot.
You won two of your Brownlows at St Kilda, and you seem to have a love-hate relationship with the game on and off, either as a player and as a coach.
I wouldn't say that. Can you explain?
Yes.
What you mean?
Well, you said that you got offside a little with Alan Jeans when he was the coach.
Little.
And you said...
Did I say a little?
It was a lot.
A lot?
Well, so that's a love-hate relationship with the game, isn't it? I'm not trying
to
love
no,
the
that's
game.
No, personalities within the game.
Person, no. I love the game.
Hang on, I've got to read
Stewie, you fascinated me.
I'm just going to ask you, because you said, I lost my dedication, you said this, I needed a new challenge, I wasn't as involved as much as I should have been, maybe I was burnt out like Mark Thompson, I wasn't getting on well with Jeansy, but I've since realised it was my fault and not Alan Jeans's. Now, we're not trying to trap you.
That's all right.
Yes.
I said all that.
I know that. I just read that out. But that to me
should
means...
should have been in PR.
That to me means that you got disenchanted with the game every now and again, and I think you didn't... had one pre-season off because you got disenchanted with it. And is that not correct?
Okay.
I'm not...
I'm doing an Alan Bond here.
No, I'm not.
I'll do one. I can't recall.
Yes. No, that's... like this,
like
the premier at the coach inquiry about the quarantine.
Nobody can remember. All
yeah,
the
that's right.
None of them.
No, that's
remember.
That's fair enough.
But I can't recall. No, I said some of those things to maybe still the waters a little bit.
Still to what?
Still, quieten things down.
Yeah. Can I ask
so,
you?
So that's why I said you had sort of a love-hate relationship. Got disenchanted every now and again with the game and came back to it.
With the club, John. Yeah, yeah. Within the club.
I'm not trying to. I'm just asking you. That seemed to be a
reason. No, I love the game. Always love the game. I found the game hard. I found it, you know.
Did you find it harder to coach the game or play the game? Because you had three stints at coaching?
Well, two and a little bit.
That's three?
I don't mind talking. That is three.
That is three.
It's always been two and one makes three. Always. No, I enjoyed coaching.
You make
but
me laugh.
Coaching was hard.
Of course.
Yeah, very hard. But it's also depends on what you were doing when you were coaching. I was also very active in business when I was coaching.
I was going to get onto that.
Ah.
So do you think that was a drawback to your prowess as coaching, that you couldn't give it your full attention? It was because you coached South Melbourne and then you left South Melbourne and went and coached Carlton and then you came back and coached South Melbourne again. Were you too demanding, or were you too why did you leave? Yes.
Well, the first time I left after 2 years, I'm an emotional sort of a person, and I put everything into it. I stopped actually working, stopped doing business things, and I was virtually a full-time coach. I asked the club. I was burnt out after 2 years, so it didn't take much to burn me out.
Is this playing or coaching?
I beg your pardon, coaching.
Yes.
What happened was I went to South Melbourne and there was nothing there. Nothing. There was nobody there.
And no talent to work with.
No, there was nobody there. It was like...
Oh, I see, yep.
A club that was from...
Skeleton club.
Well,
is this when Ron Joseph went across?
Well, he went for a short time.
Yeah, and then when he got there, he realised there was no money in the bank. He only stayed a couple of weeks and went out. So did you arrive at South Melbourne the same time that he was appointed as a secretary or CEO?
Well,
excellent question, because you were spot on. Ron rang me and said, would you like to? And I said, no. And he talked me into coaching. And then he rang after he talked me into coaching and said, I'm jumping out. There I was, left with it. But I wouldn't have gone unless Ron Joseph made the offer. And then he saw what he left. I worked through it. We started from the bottom, right from the bottom. I've seen clubs that are so much better everywhere, all over Australia at that time. We got a number of people together. We got a great recruiting officer in Greg Miller, who was a
former player
who I had to ask to step down as a player. He was a better recruiting officer than a player. we got Craig Kimberley was our president.
Craig Kimberley, yep.
Craig Kimberley, a very generous man. Not a footballer. Footballing person, but very generous and loved the players and loved the club, actually. And then we started putting... Ricky Quaid became captain, I made
yes,
him captain.
Yes, that's right.
Barry Round, vice-captain. Dean Moore, a young administrator who went to the AFL after, or the VFL, then subsequently was in charge of Sydney. We grabbed him as a young office boy. It was 18 or 19, so we got Tony Franklin and all sorts of people as an assistant coach, Ken McCormick. So we got a team around us, and yes, we slowly went from, in the previous 2 years, they'd won.
76, this is?
You're right, you're correct, Sam. 75 and 74.
They were hopeless.
They were. They won one game
exactly
each year.
76, you got him into the eight, did you?
Not quite.
They didn't have an eight in those days.
They did.
They had a five, did they? What did they have then?
They had something, but yeah. We never got into
no,
something.
It's okay.
But
77, you did all right.
Well, we haven't got to 76.
No, we haven't.
I haven't finished on 76.
Oh, right.
So 76, we won seven games.
Yep.
We turned over a lot of players, but we were starting to build a culture.
Yep.
But they talk about it now, but culture's always been important, always, and always will be, and we got those people together. Did I mention Barry Round as well?
Yes. Yeah,
we brought
him
in, and this actually interesting thing there about Roundy. Also, I had John Tolman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, we were picking people around the club, not necessarily for their football excellence. We made, in the first year, we made John Tomlin chairman of selectors.
I thought that was strange because all he was a professional runner and runners or footballers down at Caulfield.
That's him. I often saw you down there at the same time we were there.
Well, Ian's about to tell us why he made him chairman of selectors, Don.
That's true.
That's you interrupted him.
Well, he was a winner. John's a winner. And he's got a different personality to myself, and he was a sounding board, but a winner. And he set a standard there, a wonderful standard. So those were the sort of people that we had around the place. So not necessarily football people. No.
So 76, you started a bit of a climb. And
1-7. One to seven games.
Yes, yep. In 77 then you sort of hit pay dirt a little.
Was that the year we went to the finals?
Mm.
I'm not sure about that.
You knocked us off one game out at Waverley.
Yes, I remember that game.
Yeah.
Was that 77?
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, we did. No, was it? Anyhow, we did get to the finals. Whether it was that 77 or 79, I'm not sure.
Well, you weren't there in 79.
So I came back.
You were back. Yeah, okay. Of course you did.
I'm not a great
historian
yes. about what you did and what you didn't do.
Yeah, okay.
So were you good at it? Were you a good coach? I'm asking you this, I'm not making a statement. Were you too tough? Were you too demanding? Or you weren't tough enough? Or were you laconic? Or what were you?
I wasn't laconic.
No.
I thought I saw the game quickly. I thought I saw what was happening. I also thought I could judge a player quickly and an opponent quickly. I made sure that through John Tolman that the players were always had fresh legs, always. I'd rather have fresh legs than tired legs. So because we didn't have a lot of talent, they always kept fresh, you know.
What do you mean by that?
Well, running on top of the ground.
Yeah, but that's a term, running on top of it. What do you mean?
Well, what do I mean? Well, you run
in life.
You run with enthusiasm. You run light. You run with energy. You feel good. Lots of times when
you're talking about the training, you know, not pushing them too hard on the track or
yes and no. But see, later in the week, you know, so that you didn't have a heavy Thursday night.
Yeah, well, that's normal, isn't it?
Well, for some coaches it wasn't.
Yeah,
Some coaches won premierships, multiple with 2 hours on Thursday night.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, you know that.
No, I don't, because I never experienced that.
Tom Hafey?
Yeah, Tom really? Hafey did that.
God.
Ian, just for our benefits, in 1977 you got Melbourne into the five. It was a five in those days. It was Collingwood, Hawthorn, North Melbourne, Richmond and South Melbourne. So you...
77?
Yes. So you struck pay dirt, is what I said.
Okay, well, right. Well, at the end of that year, I asked the club, would they give me a couple of weeks off to rejuvenate? And they said, no, we want a decision now.
What do you say?
They said, no, we want a decision now.
Oh, decision now, yes.
And I said, no, I'm exhausted. This is at the end of the year.
Yep.
And I then sort of said to Craig, who's a good friend of mine now and then, I'm going away to the south of France.
Of course. Why wouldn't you?
I'd booked a villa for 6 months.
For 6 months?
Well, for 6 months?
So, Ian, when I
said... In Nice.
In between footy season.
No, this was at the end... Well, wait a minute. No, I'm incorrect now. I booked a villa. It wasn't for 6 months. That subsequent. That was another trip.
Oh, shit. You.
No, mate. This is fantastic.
So, I booked a villa in...
In the middle of a football...
Yes. No, at the end of the season, Craig wanted a decision. Would I coach next year? I said, I'm exhausted.
Yep.
Give me a couple of weeks. No, I want a decision now.
Yep.
I said, bugging you. You're not getting a decision
yes,
now.
Yes.
So I'm off. So he then, or they then, appointed. Then I said, well, I'm not going to coach if you want an answer.
Yep.
And that was it. I wasn't sacked.
No.
And then they appointed this Dunham.
So
then you went to – but hang on. Didn't you go to Carlton?
Well, I was overseas on my
– Villa.
Villa, in my villa in France, in Nice. Not far from Cape.
Cape where?
Cape – how do you pronounce it? Cape A-N-T – Cape.
Oh, Cape de Cor, or whatever something it's called.
Anyhow,
yeah, I know.
Anyhow,
Cape de Cap.
Cap.
I know it well.
They grabbed me over there. I saw them and they asked me, would I? And I said no. And then eventually I said yes.
To Carlton?
Yes. By that time,
yes,
I had refreshed.
I got in a couple of weeks.
No. No. It was in between seasons. And don't forget, the season might have finished in September and this might have been about November.
No, November.
No, that same year as appointed coach of Carlton.
Yes, but you're overseas.
Yes, but that's where that's where we met.
So, Ian, when I
that's where we met. I was overseas and they were – I was approached overseas.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I subsequently, from that approach –
So
just listen.
So when I said earlier on that – you had a love-hate and you got a bit disenchanted with the game. This is what I was getting at.
You couldn't have been more correct.
So this is what I said. And you sort of took a bit of umbrage at what I said. I did take
umbrage.
Criticism. It was just...
Can I take that umbrage back?
So you stopped... Craig asked you about 77. You said, no, I'm tired. And
I want a break. I want to... A couple of weeks off.
And you went over to Hotel de Cap or wherever it was over in the
Nice,
south.
Nice
in the south of France. Carlton put the call in. And
well, no, they're over there. I ran into somebody over there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And you were appointed.
Well, I would have said yes to anything when you're living there.
So you came back to Carlton, who you must be interested in what's going on at Carlton at the minute. Probably you're not. So you came back and you. Became the head coach at Carlton in 78. 78.
Well, 78 football season, but the end of 77 when they start pre-season training.
You were coaching from France at that stage. were delegating authority from
I came back and I started coaching in
Cap.
French.
Yep.
In French.
And that was one of the problems.
What, the players that didn't understand you and you only lasted a few weeks?
Well, I lasted three games.
Yeah, three games.
But the...
In that three games, yes. Did you clear Peter Bedford back to South Melbourne?
No, when I was at South Melbourne, no. When I was at South Melbourne, going back...
You sacked him?
Well, sort of. No, but there was an ageing situation where we had ageing players who were running the club.
Oh.
And when club has no success... They tend to build up their better players and make them heroes. And then as they start to run out of gas and legs, they're the last ones to think they're finished.
Yes.
Well, getting back to that culture we had to start again, we had to tell some of their champions
yes.
that they were nearly finished.
Happens to us all.
And as far as their contracts would go, because when you were coaching those days, you were involved in the contracts. As far as the coaching contracts go, you're involved there. You have to tell them they're not going to get the same sort of money they were getting because they're no longer the player
they were. Yep.
And Peter was one of those players. Right. John Rantel was another champion. Both of them were champions. Len Thompson was another. And it happens. It's not a pleasant thing to do.
No.
It's most unpleasant, actually. I don't forget that. Those dates and those people. No.
So Ian. Mm-hmm. So
can we follow? So you went to Carlton. What happened
there.
At Carlton?
Okay.
I was about to ask you.
Well, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened there was I went there on my own.
From France.
I didn't take an assistant, or I didn't take anybody. You know, I didn't take a chairman. I didn't take anybody. I must have been very, very confident in myself, mustn't I? That holiday in France, I would have said anyhow. So there was a litany of little things that went wrong. We're pre-season training, and two players, no, a player and the assistant coach, caught a tram back from the destination.
Hang on. This is coming back to me. You sent them on a long distance run. Is this where Percy Jones got on the tram and didn't run the distance? Who was the assistant coach then?
Adrian Gallagher.
Oh, Paul, really? Yeah. Okay, I do remember now. Yes.
So we sacked Adrian Gallagher, assistant coach.
Yeah.
Who I knew and liked. You couldn't help but like him.
Yeah.
Percy Jones, who lived in the same street as I did in Hobart and was a couple of years younger than me, so and I worked with his father. We suspended him for a period of whatever, I'm not sure. 2 weeks, month, I'm not sure. That got that upset quite a few of their senior players. Then the next mistake. I'm not sure. This was a mistake. The next thing we did, the match committee at the time was Wesloff's, Serge, and Kevin Hall. When I arrived, they had something in their mind that Robert Walsh wasn't the right person to be captain. This is the mistake I made, a shocker. I agreed with them. I agreed. On very little first-hand knowledge, very little, a bad mistake I made. I agreed, so I had to tell Robert that he was no longer captain. Well, and then they're all Jezelenko when I got there. Everybody was Jezelenko. So we made Jezelenko captain. Another mistake I made.
Why?
Well, he was a magnificent player.
He'd be lazy on the track, wouldn't he?
Yes. Yes. And anyhow, I'll just get to that. So, if you don't mind.
No, we don't mind.
So, we lost one game. Two games, I'm not sure, but we played three. I coached for three. We lost two and won one. And Jezza was playing on the half-back flank, wasn't picking up his man.
Well done. We put Ali De Wilde on him one day and said, just stay on the half-back flank when you and don't move, you will kick goals. And Jezelenko just took off, never picked him up, and he kicked goals.
Well, this might be boring you, I'm sorry.
No, but, it's not. It's fascinating.
I'm long-winded.
You think that's boring us, do you?
Well, it could be.
No, it's not. It's fascinating.
Well, you must be... But anyhow, so at half time, I told Jezza what I thought of him.
Which was?
Who the bloody hell does he think he is? Just because he's captain, he's Jezelenko, you've got to pick up an effing man.
Well done.
I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. And did he give me that look I can still remember? I thought I was in some part of Eastern Europe, ready to be lashed. Anyhow, that upset Jezza. Now, here comes the part now. So, I had a number of the senior players anti me, and I can understand why. This is the mistake I made. It was getting very hot for me, and I couldn't stand the pressure, and I said, I've had enough. Now, that was weak of me. I regret it for the rest of my life that I didn't fight those guys and win them over. Stay there.
Yeah, but you know in your own heart whether you're going to win them over. You've admitted to those things now, but I think you wouldn't have won them over.
But
looking back on it, okay, I'll take that back, winning them over. There was a bit of a, if I might say, a rat pack there at the time. A bigger episode than the Collingwood boys, greater numbers. I probably wouldn't have won them over. but I still regret not fighting through it, because at the South Melbourne time, that was a complete shambles when I started there. So I regret that, you know, I regret that.
So, so chronologically, I might have this in the it's incorrect sequence, but you did have as a result of the stress there, you said that you had a heart attack?
Well,
was that as a result of
I did have health
problems,
and you did have heart problems,
and you had Guillain-Barré syndrome.
No, that was a long time later.
No, I'm just asking. What?
No, but I did have a heart problem.
Yes,
but a rest for a month would have allowed me to come back and coach.
Yes,
but I took the easy way out.
Can I ask a few questions? Because I said in the thing, you're an enigma. You're fascinating. Can I ask you a few things, and we'll go back to your football career?
Well, Don.
In one or two.
Fancy you calling somebody an enigma.
Well, you are too. Well, righto, so answer these questions. Is it true that you used to vomit before you went out onto the ground? Why?
Nerves. Anxiety.
Did you have to vomit to perform?
It's a good question. That I also vomited after half time. After I vomited, I felt better.
Yeah. Lighter.
And lighter. Yes, I felt better.
Okay.
I used to build myself up to, you might say,
fever pitch.
Yes, better word.
So could you, okay, what I find, I thought you were. I thought you were unbelievably courageous. I thought you were so good at Richmond in front of those packs. Did you have a problem mentally? You know, I can't relate the two. Like, you're getting yourself really uptight, yet out on the ground, you were just so courageous. Were you fragile mentally?
I'd say, looking and watching sport and listening to the present day players, they had a better handle on it than I had on it. I didn't have a good handle on it.
What do you mean by that?
I found it unbelievably hard.
What, in what way?
Not so much the physical part that you're talking about, but building yourself up, having to play well, being under pressure week.
Did you put yourself under that pressure though?
Possibly.
So you had a high expectation each time you went out onto that ground. So you were hard on yourself?
I'd say so. Well, high expectations.
Yes.
Whether it's hard or not. But I thought that was fairly normal.
Yeah. Now, with all this, the other thing that fascinated, you were made captain in 1969 at St Kilda. 1 year. What went wrong there?
You guys have done some good homework.
No. I'm going back as a kid. I'm a kid, and I'm thinking this just doesn't add up, because here they've swapped Barrett and Stewart, and I'm thinking, shit, he was captain. He must have been a really good player. I've done no homework. I just remember because I was playing.
But nobody's ever mentioned that. Very good point. Now, what happened was I was on the match committee as captain. And looking back on it, I had too much to say. I disagreed with Alan most of the time. Now, it obviously wasn't my position as captain. He's the coach. Disagreeing with this and that. And it was unsettling for everybody for me to be disagreeing with the coach. So, funny thing with a nature of a person, but, well, when it came to football matters, I became confident. Outside of football matters, I lost that confidence. So when I went into a match committee meeting, I mean, Alan was the coach, but what he said I disagreed with. I should have shut up, but I was very confident in what I thought.
So that was hence that statement I read out about, that you, I read out before about, you needed a challenge. I wasn't involved. Maybe I was burnt out, but like Mark Thompson, I wasn't getting on well with Jeansy. That was relevant to that quote that you gave.
I never denied that. Yes.
No, I'm not saying it. That's what that was about.
Yes.
What do you mean you felt burnt out like Mark Thompson? What did that actually mean?
Who's Mark Thompson?
Coach at Geelong.
Well, did he say he's burnt out, did he? I didn't say he's burnt out like Mark Thompson, did I?
Yeah, you did. Maybe I was burnt out like Mark Thompson. I wasn't getting on well with Jeansy, but I've since realised...
I don't know if I recall saying that. How long ago did I say that?
It's funny you say that because I said I don't know Mark Thompson was in the same era as you.
No, he wasn't.
So that's right, isn't it, Rocket? I did say that before we came on.
I've never met Mark Thompson.
That's why I thought it's strange that you mentioned him, or it says you mentioned him, because you were poles apart career-wise.
So 20 years.
Yes. Yeah, getting back to that. So 1960, so what that. Happened? So you
I
had
couldn't a, follow it either.
I thought when you referred to Mark Thompson, you're talking about some... Well, F1 driver.
That's what it says.
So what happened? So you replaced in at the end of 69 because you couldn't get on with the coach.
I stepped out. I said, this is no good. And okay. Everybody realised it was no good.
Okay. Now, as a player, how did you go? Because you were fairly ineffective in 1970. Your heart wasn't in it?
I lost... back to what Sam said, I lost a lot of dedication, a bit of dedication.
So you're just going through the motions.
Sort of.
Okay, then which was interesting, the Barrett-Stewart thing. Then you reinvented yourself. I was just so impressed with you at Richmond. Where do you think you played your best football, at St Kilda or Richmond?
I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know because... What was expected of St Kilda was completely different to what Tommy expected. So I don't know. The only persons would answer that is somebody that saw both.
Now, you as an individual, you assessing your performances, you were hard on yourself. Where did you think you played better football there or better football there?
I know. Okay, well, I played 78 games or 76 games, 120-odd. I'd played, obviously, a lot longer at St Kilda. I honestly, I don't know. I mean, at St Kilda, I had some good years and couple of ordinary years. At Richmond, it probably helps answer it. I had 3 full years at Richmond and they were quite good years, yes.
Yeah, consistent. Just to put in context with the Mark Thompson thing, the Rocket here is, you said that to Mike Sheehan on open mic in 2010 that you felt burnt out in your era period of time like you thought Mike Thompson was at Geelong.
I never did open mic in 2010.
Oh.
I did open mic the other day, first time ever. It's all right. No.
We get a lot of information from Wikipedia and a lot of it's wrong.
I haven't got any Wikipedia things, but then you retire. And you just floated off into the ether. Who came up with the idea of you coaching? Because you weren't writing columns, you're doing nothing, and then next minute you're coaching at South Melbourne. Who
That's the
pushed
second time.
You forward to be a coach?
You left Carlton and then you coached South Melbourne again.
First time.
He's done that, he said that.
No, well, what happened was, getting back to... I said to myself, well, look, it's all very well for... This is what I thought to myself. It's all very well for me to say, I don't think that so-and-so's made da-da-da-da-da, and say this and that. And when people ask me about different coaches or different... I used to have an opinion. And it was fairly strong opinion. And so I said to myself, wait a minute, who have you coached?
Who, you?
Yeah, I said to myself, you've got sort of fairly arrogant running around when people ask you about this person, that person, and you give a strong opinion. Maybe you can't coach. Maybe you're not as good as you think you might be.
Yeah, so it's self-doubt.
No, I'm saying that I was thinking, why don't I challenge myself to coaching?
I see.
And when I was offered the job out of nowhere, But
somebody must have pushed you up.
No, nobody. But no, well, so, no, nobody did. No.
Okay, so then we.
I don't know why Ron Joseph asked me.
Okay, but the other thing is, then you coached and da-da. Where did you come from? How did you become general manager at St Kilda? You've come from nowhere, and you're general manager.
Well, that was a title that was loosely applied, but Lindsay Fox came to me and said, look, you've given nothing back to St Kilda. Why don't you do this? I want you to be a consultant and look at what's going wrong. I said, well, okay, I'll only do it for a year. A month. So we did a deal on a month consultancy. Went back to Lindsay and said, this is wrong. That's wrong. Players are overpaid. You're leasing players from all over Australia. You don't own them. And this and that, that and this. And Lindsay said in his Lindsay's manner, then we'll fix it. I said, I'm not fixing it. I said, this is a one-month consultancy. Mm. He said, gave me a shocking pay. So I said, okay. And so I lasted 18 months. But re-changed all of those problems that we're talking about, overpayments and leasing five or six South Australian players, not owning them and all these sort of things. It was... That's when, but really all I was football manager.
So
really, but they did say general manager. Yeah. But at that time, they were in a scheme of arrangement. Yeah. There was no money there.
So Ian, like all of us, you had some underlying trauma in your life. Do you think some of that personal trauma affected your... stance or ability or perspective on your football coaching?
Yes. I'm very clever, you two boys. Very clever.
Why?
Yes.
Well, because
I don't know why, but you are. But some of the questions you've asked, yes, it was.
Because
now when I said I could coach, there were certain elements of coaching I was good at. Yep. But there were other elements that I wasn't so good at. And those are the ones that probably were the reason I didn't continue to coach.
Where did you see your weakness as a coach?
Well, hang on.
We haven't got long enough time.
No, just so you suffered a personal tragedy. You lost your daughter to a car accident. Did that affect?
No, that was 15 years ago. My coaching was over after that.
I beg your pardon.
No, it's all right.
Because I know what it. I've found out recently what it's like to lose someone like that, and someone near and dear to you.
It affected my life, yes. Not my football life.
No, so
that was over.
And you've handled that okay, or you've probably never got over that.
Well, my condolences to you, Sam.
Yeah, no, I'm
no, but I know that, but I should have. Said that earlier.
No, you shouldn't have.
Yes, I should have.
This is about you.
But no, you never get over it.
Makes you reflect on.
How does a woman feel though? The mother.
Yes.
She carried that child.
Yes.
For 9 months, and it came out of her womb. How does she must feel? Now, okay, yes, it's harder on the male, but a woman. So. It was
something with you all the time.
Yes, yep. Yes, it is. It is, and our daughter was a very good rider, horse rider.
Oh yeah!
Don, wow.
Was she a showy?
Yes, she is, and she was very good. But her room now is still exactly the same as it was when she was competing. Yes, but.
You push on. You have no alternative.
You do.
And if you and yeah, it's so as an I don't know if this was an escapism or not, but it said here this is you went to the Kalahari Desert to were you involved in uranium mining? when was that, Ian? What was that about? Was that during your football?
No, at the end, I did other things as crazy as that. But no, I believed in clean air.
Yes.
I believed in clean air, and climate. I believed in the future of uranium. I believed in, you know, getting rid of CO2s and all of that stuff. So
is that nuclear? Yep.
Uranium's nuclear, yeah.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying...
Yes, it is, yes.
Nuclear power is a very clean form of energy.
So I got involved and I started... I got involved in business, a share market, and I was following different companies, and I got involved and I believed in that. And before that, I believed in containerization. You know, the big ships?
Yep.
Mm. So I bought something down near the docks, and then continuation after that...
You're a visionary.
Well, have vision, but I'm not sure about visionary. Everybody's got some sort of vision. Yeah. So I went to the company that I was involved with went to Africa, became a large shareholder. We had this massive block of pounds of uranium. We had the 10th largest mine, underdeveloped mine in the world, and we were going beautifully. I loved Africa because it was different, completely different where we were mining, and people, you learn a lot there. People are so poor, yet so happy. And they're so happy, and all they wanted in those days was a mobile phone. Where they lived were in huts made out of mud and no money, no food, always laughing, always happy.
How does a man who's won 3 Brown Note medals, coached one football side twice and another one in between, suddenly become a uranium entrepreneur? Where does that come from? How did that start?
Well...
You must know someone or...
No. I followed companies.
Yeah.
Religiously and backed in.
You stumped people. Up some money to own a uranium.
No, it wasn't my company.
No?
No, I was just a large shareholder. It wasn't my company. There were the Chinese and one other person than myself.
Yep, I see.
And the actual share. But what happened there was... be careful of this word, Fukushima.
Yes.
There was the big earthquake there nine years ago.
Yep.
And the reactor there broke open.
Yes.
And the uranium there they stored spilled and went down and helped kill some people.
Mm. Yep.
But hundreds of people got killed in the tsunami.
Yeah.
At that moment then, everybody in that part of the world said, we don't want anything to do with uranium. So Germany, they stopped uranium use and this and that. And so all of a sudden, nobody wanted uranium. But at the particular time, France, and they still do, their energy is run by 80% nuclear. And I just thought it was the way that we were all going to go eventually. And so the shares became worthless.
I'll pay you... Peter Welsh told me, the late Peter Welsh played in the back pocket of Hawthorn. Okay. He used to go to the dinners, the premiership dinners put on by Ian Wilson, and the highlight was to seek you out and sit down and talk to you. He said you were a very fascinating individual. Listening to you now, was it your upbringing? Because took your mother's name, it wasn't your father's name. You had to survive and grow up. You were unique, you know, in as much as you built a house when you first came across, you got into factories. I came across you when you were into factories. You go from one thing to another. Are you a visionary? Do you lose interest in something? Or do you constantly need a challenge?
I don't know the answer to that, but looking back on it, like you've explained it, it says that you're looking for another challenge, but... Now, the markets change. Well, the uranium was forced upon me. But before that, I was involved in phones.
You were in hotels.
No. When I went into a hotel, I had no money. I went into the hotel because I was very, very short.
But in Queensland, you were doing houses that was on with the Jeff beach Raines.
No, I never with Jeff.
Oh, I thought you were doing houses with Rainsy.
No, I knew Jeff up there and I loved Jeff, but no, he was doing what he was doing and I was doing what I was doing. But we used to talk about it. No.
So to Don's point about you took your mother's name, you reconciled with your father not long before he died. Did you find that a cathartic experience? Did you find that uplifting and fulfilling, or did you think it was something you had to do without knowing any of the details as to...
No, well, I'd never met my father. He left when I was three and I couldn't remember him. His brothers, he was an Italian. His brothers knew about me. He never contacted me. The brothers organised a barbecue for me to meet him. It was in Hampton.
In 72.
I'm not sure when.
Oh, it's not long before he passed.
Yeah, it was.
Died, yep.
3 or 4 months. And in the barbecue, and the brothers introduced me to, this is Aldo. And Aldo shook my hand, never looked at the phone, walked off.
Holy mackerel.
So it wasn't cathartic. No.
So Ian, so your brothers tried to have the, not a peace offering, but that must have been absolutely confronting for you to meet your father. And that is amazing, to meet your father and him
he
not,
walked off in
not
about,
recognize you.
In about 10 seconds, 15 seconds.
That must have been a kick in the guts. That must have consumed you, surely.
No? Only for a short time.
Not really?
Well, yes, but for a short time.
That is amazing.
No,
that he wouldn't want to.
Well, no, because
no, not really,
you've grown
because
up. You've had to survive, haven't
see,
you?
The other thing
he knew
too,
who you were. He knew all about
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well, his brothers did. So
yeah, that's
he
right.
Lived, he went back, came back to Melbourne. I've since met my half sisters. So he married again.
Yep.
Italianos from Brunswick.
Yep.
I've since met them, and they've been to my home, and we've been to their place. So, it was disappointing.
No, that's fair enough.
But don't forget. See, there were circumstances leading to that. My mother lived the life that my father had died in the war, which subsequently was impossible, but because it wasn't the time when I was born. So I grew up in the early years thinking my father was deceased. Why didn't you? Kids would say, why haven't you, where's your father?
Mm.
So he's passed away.
Mm.
Then as I got a bit older, I got into a representative side for Tasmania under 13s. And you had to produce your
birth certificate.
Birth certificate. And I produced one with the name Chervy on it.
Oh.
Ian Harlow Cherry.
Yep.
And they wouldn't accept it.
Ian Harlow, that's right. Harlow.
Yeah, Ian Harlow.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so they wouldn't accept it.
Well, you didn't play.
Well, somehow my mother must have had to sign an affidavit or something along those lines in those days. And I did. But I said to my mother, what's this? She said, I was going to tell you. Your father was Italian.
Right.
So I didn't know.
Right.
But then after I realised they went around in Queenstown, a mining town, West Coast, where hillbillies are aplenty there.
Yeah, there's no grass on the oval.
No grass, but hillbillies everywhere. Mm. What was a Deliverance movie? Yep. I thought it must have been shot in Queenstown. but it wasn't. And they used to call me Wog, little bastard. And I wondered why I couldn't work it out. Nobody explained to me. Anyhow, so I found out when I was 11.
You've lived life on the edge in various aspects of your life. There's been some controversial incidents in your life.
There has been.
There has been. Is that as a result of the pressure of football, or the pressure of life, or the pressure of business? You've done things that you're probably embarrassed about that public knowledge, but I'm...
All to do with alcohol.
So that was my...
Next question.
Well, I'm not...
Is alcohol a problem?
Oh, very, very serious problem.
Was it a problem for you?
But I enjoy a drink. No, never a problem.
But on the off chance, always you drank, had quite always a few drank. Drinks, you did some unusual things or things that
You're referring to the policeman in hitting the policeman in the city. There were sort of rumours going around that I was dressed as a female. You're referring to that?
Ian, I wasn't, but I was. I'm very glad because people. No, that's. Right. I'm so glad you mentioned that because I was wondering how I would address the fact that is a rumor, and what? How would that rumor start?
Well, I don't know, but the circumstances I can remember, I was having a beer at the Windsor Hotel, nothing but the best places to wine and dine of an afternoon, and I parked the car down a bit further and I came out. Oh, car was parked in the old gas and fuel building.
Yep.
Car was parked there. Windsor up there having a drink. I ran into my neighbour next door who was in the Windsor. So then after I'd finished, would have been a couple of hours there, I got into my car up in the gas and fuel. Came down to make a right-hand turn. Or a left hand, you couldn't get out of there but the bloody trams.
That's right.
And the traffic. So after 5 or 10 minutes, I decided to drive out into the traffic and go round the tram. So I turned right rather than left, right, and went around the tram. A young policeman was around there, saw me. He must have recognised me. And as he asked me to pull over, I refused to pull over.
Because you'd had a couple of drinks?
More than a couple.
Yep.
And I went up to the first cross street, which would be the little Flinders Street, little Collins Street, and he's still running behind me, chasing me, because the traffic was so bad you couldn't go very fast. And eventually he caught up with me at the intersection at Elizabeth Street and little Collins and little Flinders Street. Little Flinders, caught up with me. The traffic, the passengers were all there, or the public pedestrians were there, and he was banging on the car
window. And how did the stuff about you being in women's clothing come up?
Well, from that.
He made that up.
No, nobody made it up. It just became a rumour.
Oh, it just came folklore.
Yeah. No. Well, everybody in the street saw me.
Yep.
And the policeman recognised me. Anyhow, so the next thing I did, which wasn't very smart, he laid himself across the bonnet of the car.
That wasn't very smart, no.
You know,
particularly if someone's had a couple of drinks.
And I had a nice car. And I said, I'll give it to you, UB. Don't forget where you came from.
Who, you or him?
Where I came from, you know, the boondocks in Tasmania. So I went across the road, flat out, and put the brake on.
Oh, he slid off. Batter safe on one.
More than slid.
Yeah.
He flew through the air. And that's where it all came from.
Now
that's true.
An unusual incident.
Another one
outside the railway station. Did you not? You were asked. The police stopped you in your car, or you were in your car outside the police station or the railway station in Glen Huntly.
I had a laundromat there. I had a business there.
Did you? Yep.
No, I don't. Yeah, come on.
Were you charged with exposing yourself, or
no?
No, you weren't. So that's how do these things manifest themselves in the stuff that we read? That's why it's good to have people in here to refute all this stuff.
No. Well, in Glen Huntly Road, outside the police station, there's a police station right there.
Yep.
But my business was there. Elsterwick, on the corner there of opposite the railway station.
Yep.
I had a laundromat.
Yep.
Business.
He had some businesses.
He had more than a few. He's a lot.
Phones, mining.
You're into shops now, aren't you? Developing shops now?
Subdivision. A small time. No. Now, Rex Hunt.
Did Rex tell you that one?
Mate,
no, because I tell you why. I was around that area once, and my mate had too much to drink, and he said to Rex, "I know where you're stealing something." Rex said, "Oh, I'll let you off. Give me your keys." That was right out, round about there. That's the only
Rex let you off?
No, he let my mate off. I wasn't with my mate, but my business was there. I was working there. That's the only incident that happened there.
This is not an inquisition or an inquiry. No, these are just things that it's very good to ask the people so they can clear them up, because you are one of the most fascinating people we have spoken to.
Can I tell you this, though? I'm pleased that you've asked these questions, because it's very difficult to live a life and not be guilty about something that you've been accused of. It's a lot easier when you've done something wrong and that's it. You live with that. It's easy. And I've been aware of these innuendos for a long time. But knowing that they're not true has allowed me to survive and to put up with it. But it is something that I haven't enjoyed. And that would be something, probably one of the reasons why I haven't been available to the media functions or whatever, because not that I was guilty, well, I wasn't, but I knew that a lot of people looked at me and thought that, because when you shake hands with somebody and you look at them and they meet you and they say, and you can feel, wait a minute, this person's got a predetermined opinion of me. And it's not very nice.
So I've
had to live with that.
I'm so thankful that have asked you those questions, because you have now said exactly what you wanted to say and what we hoped you would say.
Really?
Ian, absolutely.
No, well,
that's why we bring them up.
No,
because I get accused. I would hate to bring me into this. I get accused of a lot of things that I've never done and I've never said. I'm happy to cop the things that I have done and never said. But the rumour and the innuendo in your reputation precede you. Your character is who you really are.
Exactly. Exactly. Beautifully said. That's true.
I'm not sure if we can go any further with this. We've done the football. We've done...
Well, I would have liked to have asked more football, but anyway,
Well, we've been going for about an hour,
As Peter Welsh said, you are a fascinating character, the last Peter Welsh, and he used to enjoy every meeting with you at those reunions.
I've had a wonderful, fantastic life.
You have.
Can I say... Is the podcast finished, is it?
No, it's finished when you finish it. We'd like to do it for about an hour.
No, I'd like to say a couple of other things. I am not after sympathy now, but I ended up in an orphanage.
When?
As a kid.
Oh, really?
Yes.
This is stuff that Google machine doesn't tell us.
No, well, what happened was that a single mother, there was no pensions, so she had to work, so I was put in an orphanage in Hobart.
And from what age?
From about 7 or 8 for a few years. And the rest, a lot of the other kids there were kids that were getting into trouble. There were kids that were sent out from England when the leaving of Liverpool, that doco where they sent all these kids out from England that their parents didn't want after. Remember that one?
Yes.
They sent them all out to all the orphanages around Australia.
Western Australia,
And Tasmania. The name of the orphanage was Boystown. I lived there.
Yes.
But that created... We are all products of our environment.
Well done.
All of us.
That's why I was trying to get to you, that you're a survivor.
Well, I'm a survivor, but that taught you to survive.
That's right.
Because you have to survive there. But the other thing, interesting thing was that they were Italians and all sorts of priests and brothers there. And to get rid of you, they'd throw you a football, because they couldn't speak English. They just throw you a football. And you'd pick it up and you'd kick, because that's all you had.
Now, Ian Harlow Stewart.
Chervy, thank you.
What?
Ian Harlow Chervy. I've gone back to the Italian one.
Have you really?
No, you haven't. No, you haven't. Ian Harlow Stewart, you are an intriguing man and you are a star. You are a star. I know you're a reluctant star. seeing as your medal is coming up on Sunday, doing
what,
it by
what
Zoom.
What medal is it?
Seeing as your medal.
As they'd say interstate, Bronlow.
Seeing as your
Bronlow. Up in Queensland, they said, oh, you won the Bronlow.
Well, seeing as the Bronlow is being decided next Sunday and you're a student of the game, who do you think might win your medal?
I think four players. Oliver,
Bontepelli.
Italians. Let's see if I get another Italian. Petrakis, Greek,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah,
Petrakis.
But, at least there's four or five chances.
So you have, you're one of two living people that have won three Brownlows, Bobby Skilton and you, Hayden Bunton and Dickie Reynolds are no longer with us. Do you ever have a reunion for the three-time medals with Bobby Skilton and just sit and say, aren't we stars, we've won six between us? Don't answer that.
I sometimes pinch myself. So did I do that?
No,
I go there. I'm not only talking about football. I've had a fantastic life. But I'd like to say something, if you wouldn't mind. I've got a beautiful wife. I've been lucky. That's where God's been very good to me, actually.
Yep.
He takes it from you early.
Yes.
Builds you up. And then I married a beautiful woman. She was 18 and I was 28. We're still together. We've had three beautiful children. One, unfortunately, we discussed Amy.
Yes, yep.
My daughter has two children. She's back in Sydney. She's a corporate girl. And this is the point. My son, who on open mic, they asked about his football, and he was drafted to St Kilda and father and son.
Really?
Well, he was, but he never made it. But he wasn't quite good enough. He was good. He was in the next rung underneath. But he's had a very, very successful business life. And, you know, he's outstandingly successful in property in Sydney.
So
I've been blessed.
You are blessed and you're a star and you are a legend of the AFL, which is in
a legend? I hate that word.
No, mate, because they bestow that on people who have made the game what it is and you are one of them.
What about the people they see? G'day, legend. I'm not talking about anybody. They call everybody a legend.
Well, I'm calling you a legend too. The legend, it's been great to speak to you and thank you so much for coming down from your country retreat and country estate to speak to us on You Cannot Be Serious.
What's it called? Ponderosa. My country.
Ponderosa.
Yeah.
You got a Ponderosa, have you?
What's a Ponderosa?
Big place.
We're trying to finish
big,
this.
Big, you know, you bastard.
Don, Don, say goodbye to the legend.
Oh, I'd like to keep talking.
No,
to
we, can't, we can't. We can't.
We can't. Oh, did I tell you that what I am an hour? Yeah. What it cost me an hour?
What? For you to come here? Yeah. No, you get nothing.
400 an hour.
Yeah, bullshit. You're not getting anything.
Oh, okay. Next time.
Yeah, next. It won't be a next time.
I'm joking, Sam. You're looking very serious.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
You're a star.